You're listening to Angel Insights, brought to you by Syndicarum. This is the show that takes you inside the world of angel investing and micro VC to uncover the tips, tactics and strategies of some of the world's leading investors. And joining us today, I'm delighted to welcome my good friend Nancy Fechnay. Now, Nancy is a partner at Flight Ventures, where she runs the UK syndicate, which now has over 430,000 committed to it. And Nancy moved to London from Silicon Valley in 2014, having spent time with the likes of Kleiner Perkins and GE Ventures. And now in the UK, Nancy is the interim director at Techstars London, as well as an advisor to several select UK and US-based startups. And she also has a soft spot for wearables and other digital hardware plays, but invests across all sectors. Therefore, it's time for me to hand over the mic. So without further ado, I'm delighted to welcome Nancy Fechnay, partner at Flight Ventures. Nancy, welcome to the show. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Now, I'd love to kick off by hearing how you made your way into the world of technology and startups themselves.
Well, I was an engineer and at University of Virginia. I studied systems and information engineering. So I always loved tech and to tinker with things. But how I got into VC is a bit unusual. I actually met the CFO of a venture capital firm in California at an event in DC. And I just applied to go to Duke University for graduate school when I met her. And she asked me what I was doing for the next 8 months. I said, I don't know. But what you do sounds really interesting. And so she said, well, why don't you interview? And I did. I, right before the interview, was on Wikipedia searching what is venture capital. But I got the job, and 2 weeks later, I was moving to California. And that was my first entry into venture capital. And from there, I just fell in love with the idea of working with founders and being a part of building incredible businesses.
And then I have to ask, now operating in the UK, and when looking back to that time working in the US, having worked in both the venture scenes now, when you compare them, what are the biggest differences for you?
Well, I can answer that question in two ways. I'd say if you're comparing the two ecosystems, the thing that makes the Valley, in my opinion, is that you have these incredible individuals coming out of the top universities, either coming out of Stanford or Berkeley, but or flocking from other schools in the States to San Francisco. So you have that intellect as number one. Number two, you have the venture capitalists, you have the investors, you have the money. Number two. Number three, you have the corporates. And that's really key. What we're missing here in this ecosystem is enough corporate interaction. I've seen it increase over the last couple of months, even the last 6 or 8 or so months in the UK, where corporates are stepping up, trying to get more involved in the startup scene, trying to be more innovative themselves and launching accelerator programs, which I think is fantastic. And it's really what this ecosystem needs to take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. The other piece that we have that's different here in terms of ecosystem is that we're missing the later stage funding, so the Series B and C. Mm-hmm. I believe the British government is really quite impressive how active they are in trying to solve that problem, and they're addressing it today. For one, you know, launching the British Growth Fund, which does Series A and B investments, will also help this ecosystem hopefully keep some of these really talented entrepreneurs from having to go to the Valley to raise their next round, which is what we want, because we want the talent to stay here.
Absolutely. And you spoke there about the kind of insane entrepreneurial talent that flocks to the Valley in the US. And I've heard you speak before about kind of founder highs. And I was wondering if you could explain that sentiment to us and what you mean by founder high.
Right. So this is a phrase that I coined recently, because people like to ask me, what do you miss most about the Valley? The honest answer is I miss getting founder highs. I miss being around these extremely ambitious, driven, passionate entrepreneurs that devote every minute of their day to building their company. And they know where their industry is going. 5 years ahead, they have an opinion about what it'll look like. And I think here you get the same experience, but not as often. And I'm not sure if that's because we're in a less developed ecosystem at this point, or maybe it's a result of the fact that a lot of these founders do have to go to the States in order to raise their later rounds of funding, so there aren't as many of them here. But regardless, I think that's the sentiment. A founder high is when you get a high from being around an incredible founder, and you leave that meeting on cloud nine with high energy and driven and excited about what they're doing. And it just makes the rest of your day extremely exciting.
And do you think then that it's fair to say entrepreneurs in the UK are, as always suggested in kind of media, more risk averse than the US go-getting attitude?
I think as a culture, Europeans tend to be more risk averse. And I hate saying that and generalizing individuals, mass number of individuals like that, but I think it is true. Mm-hmm. I also think it's a result of the investors. I think some investors here are risk averse. You know, they might come from iBanking or private equity where they're used to having KPIs and numbers to base a decision off of. And therefore, when they don't have those things, they don't want to make the investment or encourage founders to take smaller steps in order to build the business. And that is something I've worked with a lot of entrepreneurs in the recent months as I'm advising seed stage companies now. And a lot of them, when I say, no, dream bigger, think bigger. How are we going to make this a global company? And they say, well, this is what I wanted to do. But all my past advisors and mentors have told me I'm thinking too big and that I need to take small bite-sized steps. And I just don't have that same point of view.
And as a seed advisor to many really early stage companies, I'd love to hear then probably the most common mistakes that happen at that stage. Is there a recurring issue that always happens if it's, you know, lack of product market fit, co-founders not getting on? What's the common thing that always comes up in terms of problems with startups?
I could give you a list of 10 or 20 things that happen, but to be honest, that's what's so exciting about the startup world. There is no common thing. In this ecosystem, I see more often, especially lately, young founders or first-time founders getting taken advantage of, which is saddening a bit, by more seasoned investors or individuals that can get them money from high net worths because of the SEIS funding. And that's frustrating. Because I wish that people weren't taken advantage of in that sense, but it is true. And then the other part of it is that you have a lot of really brilliant technical minds here coming out of the top universities, and yet they don't have the same business background. So they have great tech and they don't know how to build a business around it.
Mm-hmm. And I'd love to talk about that taken advantage of there then, because it's always intriguing.
Uh-oh.
No, it's intriguing for me though, because surely it's actually paradoxical for the angel investors or investors at all to try and kind of not cheat over, but take advantage of young founders in terms of valuation and equity, because surely that just disincentivizes them for the future and gives them a bigger pie of something less valuable.
Yeah. And it makes it harder for them to raise their future rounds from professional smart investors, because we'll look at the cap table and say, what the hell have you done? Mm-hmm. I also believe that business should be done with morals. And I think this is not a statement about Europe. This is a statement about the entire world. I mean, this happens in the Valley too. I just like to think that if we all approach things with morals, that the world would be a bit better place.
And then you also said there about individuals coming out of brilliant institutions in the UK with heavy technical talent and maybe not the business experience. Is that somewhere where angels or seed investors can come in and provide those? Or is it something that you think needs to be inherent within a founding and core team?
I think that eventually, and it depends on the stage of the company, you do need a business mind on the team to drive the business forward. That can't all be done by advisors and mentors. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the early stages of a business, if you have the right advisory network or the right people working with you, sure, you can get pretty far with their advice and their help being a heavy tech founder. You can read the right books and go to the right seminars to learn how to build a business around what you've created. But eventually you will need to bring someone on the team that can help drive the business and grow the business. Otherwise, you're not going to have a reputable company in the end.
And I want to now delve into you and Flight UK and your work in the kind of UK tech space. So why did you decide to set up with Gil? What was the kind of catalyst for you joining?
To be honest, I met Gil, and you've met Gil. He's probably one of the most motivating and inspirational individuals that had the pleasure of working with. And when you talk to him and you hear him talk about the future and where the investing world is going and how, you know, Flight at the time, it was a different name, but it's founder friendly. It's really about providing them with a support system and hopefully a favorable terms to the investment, that we believe in building strong businesses that way. And that to me was exciting and something new. And the idea of launching a US entity here in the UK, essentially, and replicating what he had built in the US here was really exciting to me because I'm very entrepreneurial myself and it felt like I was starting my own company with a framework already in place.
So what's the mission then for you with Flight VC UK and what's the average check size?
So the mission would be, I guess, that we look at anything from, you know, a super seed size to a Series A. I did do one Series B. I do tend to still look at things from an investor point of view of how I was taught in the Valley. So I definitely compare things to the caliber of deal flow that I saw there and still see mm-hmm. there, which I think is a different mindset. And in terms of industries, we focus on, I'll look at anything with a tech piece to it as long as it's not clean tech, biotech. Gil doesn't really like food tech and music tech, so we avoid those as well. And otherwise, I'll look at pretty much everything across the board.
And you said about learnings from the Valley there. Is there any kind of core learnings you learned from the Valley that you've taken with you to Flight now?
It's not just about the KPIs and traction of a company. It's about taking risk and providing the founders with a network and know-how and experience as well as money. We don't want to just be the money in the bank. We want to actually provide them with a network mm-hmm. and a system and advice. So for me, that's really important. I also look at probably things with a bit more of a risky hat on than most investors here. Mm-hmm. And I don't like local businesses. I want something that can be global, that's truly global and scalable.
And talking of the geographies there, at the moment you're UK focused only. Are you looking to expand to Europe in the coming months or years?
So when we launched Flight here, which was back in February of last year, I was the first international partner. And so I was trying to cover all of Europe and found that that is very, very difficult. That's like one person in the Valley trying to cover all of the US. By default, I became focused on the UK. It's not because I haven't looked at deals from Germany and the Nordic region, which I do really love a lot of those investments. And I still talk to investors out there. And I, you know, had a call this week with a founder from the Nordic region. But I focus on the UK just because it's my backyard.
And we've spoken before about the passion of the team and how important that is. But there's always kind of a dichotomy with investors, and that's whether to follow the passion of the team or the product. And I'm always intrigued whether investors are product-centric or people-centric. So which one would you say you fall under?
Definitely people-centric, unfortunately or fortunately. I'm not sure. It depends on how you look at it. I believe the product can always change. The service can always change. The company idea can change, but what you can't, or it's harder to change, especially with an earlier stage company, is the team.
And I'd love to hear then, working with Gil and working alongside Gil, what the biggest kind of learnings and takeaways have been from that experience?
For Gil, be honest, no matter what the reality, be straightforward with founders. Don't waste their time. Inspire others, and always be thinking ahead. What are the next steps? What does the world look like in 3 to 5 years?
And then final question before we delve into the quickfire round, and I want to talk about the future. What are the plans with Flight UK Syndicate? And then now you're interim director at Techstars. So how does that integrate with the syndicate?
Those are just two of the hats of the five hats that I wear. But
okay, talk to me about these hats.
Well, to answer your question, I'll come back to the hats, but to answer your question about the plans for Flight VC, I mean, all of our partners do other things. I don't think there are any of our partners that are just full-time Flight other than Gil and Sean. And that means that, you know, it makes sense for me to take on the interim director role at Techstars. And I'm just doing that through the first week of May. And on top of that, I also am launching a female founders brand right now, a service and mentoring network for the ambitious young female founders in the UK. I also am starting something called the Inspire Movement, sponsored by Google, which I'm not openly talking about yet, but our website should go up in the next 2 weeks. And then, you know, as you know, I buy seed stage companies. And to be honest, that's probably the most rewarding of all of them because I get to see founders from the beginning of the day, you know, have a huge problem. And then we address it throughout the day and they walk away with a plan of how to attack it and what to do over the next 3 to 6 months. And to me, that's really rewarding. So all those things do align. You know, when I'm looking at really early stage stuff, you know, pre-seed, post a small angel or EIS or SEIS round. Mm-hmm. It's interim director at Techstars because I hope that they apply to be a part of the summer cohort. With Series A, I'm wearing my Flight hat. With the guys raising a seed round, a typical seed round, I'm usually advising them. and then female founders and Inspire are completely separate.
And what's your weighting in each kind of hat wearing responsibility? Do you lean much more towards flight, towards Techstars?
Depends on the hour of the day. I think of Techstars as my biggest client, so I work with them 2 days a week.
Okay.
And the rest of the time, and I think about it that there's 5 more days in the week, I try and take one of those days off to do something fun. Last weekend I went skydiving. This week I'll play some tennis. And the rest of that time is split pretty evenly through the rest of it.
Okay, fantastic. And I'd love to dive into a quick fire round now where I say a short statement and you give me your immediate thoughts.
All right.
So your favorite book and why?
So I love reading inspirational quote books.
Okay.
I know it's a bit dorky, and I have about 50 of them in my flat at home. Right now I'm also reading The Machine Learning, the Art of Science and Algorithms That Make Sense of Data by Peter Fletch. But other than that, I have my nerdy books and then I have my inspirational ones.
And then you're a very busy lady. So what are the top productivity tips and tools?
I knew you were going to ask that question.
I had to. This has been in the offing, this meeting, for months. So I had to ask.
This is the problem. I don't have good enough ones. So what you need to do is send me an email with what everybody else said to this question. But to be honest, what I'm working on right now is learning to say no. And I try and remember the quote that to be world-class at one thing, you need to say no to 99% of the other things you could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So I'm working on that skill right now.
And then if you could give founders one piece of advice, what would it be?
Dare to dream big. Don't let the dark moments and the hard times bring you down.
And then which founder do you most respect or admire?
You know, there's another one that's funny. I could say Steve Jobs or Sam Altman, or I could even say Gil Pacino. But to be honest, the person who's impacted me the most in my life as an entrepreneur is my father.
What did your father do, if you don't mind me asking?
So he worked his way up at the bottom of a family business. And when he got to the top, and I don't know if this is public knowledge, so I better be careful. But it was bankrupt. And so he had to rebuild the business alongside the CEO. He was president. There was a CEO. And they developed a technology for the food service business, the first of its kind, to basically order food from restaurants, to order food from them and do it all electronically rather than on paper by fax. And that took off. And now he is a private investor himself.
And then I'd love to hear your favorite blog or newsletter. I'm always looking for more.
The newest one, I read all the typical ones and I love the Term Sheet and Premick is great. But the newest one that I've been reading lately that I like is called The Memo by Alex Wood. I don't know if you've come across it.
I have actually, yeah. He was on Balderson's podcast recently. I've spoke to him the other day.
Yeah, I really like The Memo. It keeps me up to date and it's fun and it's kind of sexy and different.
Awesome. And then finally, your most recent investment and why you said yes.
So my most recent investments were angel investments, actually, in Codec and Listable. And the reason I said yes to those was it came down really to the founder and their team. I think both of them will be extremely successful in their life. And if I could have invested, I actually often think about if I could just invest in the individual. I don't know if this company will be it, but I think they're going to be extremely successful in their lifetime. Maybe I could just buy equity in them, but I instead had to buy equity in their businesses.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Nancy, for joining us today. It's been absolutely brilliant to hear your story, and I'm so grateful for you giving up the time.
No, thank you, Harry. This has been really fun. I really enjoyed it.
And again, I'd like to say a huge thank you to Nancy for giving up her time today to be on the show. What an incredible story it is with Flight Ventures, and we look forward to seeing the growth of the syndicate. And if you're loving Angel Insights, then you can follow us on Twitter at Syndicate Room. Also, we'd like to remind you that early stage investing is risky. Therefore, please ensure to do the proper due diligence prior to making the investment. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. And we look so forward to bringing you next week's episode with Bitcoin Jesus, Roger Ver.